Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Subject of Asterix the Gaul not being racy, I suggested this when Lindsay Duncan was in. We were talking about the actor who plays Caesar in the BBC series Rome at the moment. I said he got the job basically because he looks exactly like the cartoon of Caesar in Asterix. And he says, Asterix not racy? I remember one book that featured an orgy with one guest getting repeatedly whipped for dropping his bread in the fondue.
That's quite right. That's absolutely. Yeah, I do. It's Asterix in Switzerland. Whoever wrote that is absolutely right. There is a cheese orgy sequence, and I'm pretty sure it's Asterix in Switzerland.
Oh, I missed that. That's the one I was never bought.
And it's all the stuff about getting hair in the cheese. There's a whole big thing about them getting their beards in the cheese because I think it's the same one in which they're drinking a potion that makes their beards grow.
So let's give us the box office top 10. We can give you sky high at 10.
I've had an email from a listener who says, because it's the last time it's going to be in the top 10, can I just say Bruce Campbell? So yes, Bruce Campbell. I mean, yes, of course, Bruce Campbell. He's fantastic. Sky High is nothing like as bad as it could have been. And Bruce Campbell is in it. And Bruce Campbell, whose autobiography incidentally is called If Chins Could Kill.
Not bad.
No.
Broken Flowers at 9.
I'm a big fan. We got another email from a listener who said that they've gone to see it and they thought the projectionist had fallen asleep because it was so boring. Wrong. You know, it's a movie that takes its time.
Number 8, Garam Masala.
Haven't seen it. It has gone straight in at number 8. And I imagine it must have come out last week but wasn't amongst the national press show. So I'll go and try
and catch it
this
weekend.
Are we
talking Bollywood, presumably?
Yes, I imagine.
Corpse Bride at 7.
You know, I love it. My kids loved it. One of my kids' friends didn't love it quite so much. So I think it's for children who incline to the dark side.
Number 6, Elizabethtown.
The debate kind of rages because I've been sent a copy of the poster which says, beautifully made, dunst is charm personified, Rich Klein, BBC Radio 5 Live. A place you won't forget and a movie you'll fall in love with, James King, Radio 1.
Half.
And then someone has stuck on for me, how much does it stink? More than a very stinky thing indeed.
It's a unique poster, though.
It really, honestly, it is. It's a possible contender for worst film of the year. I mean, it's up there with Last Days, which is awful, and the Guy Ritchie film. I mean, I cannot believe that anyone could see it without throwing up.
Interesting email from David in Darlington. If ever a film deserved a full-on Kermode rant, it was Elizabethtown.
Oh, well, there we go.
I enjoyed Kermode's rant at Exorcist the beginning, for it was truly a despicable film with no artistic merit to speak of. But at least it did not make me gnaw at my own back teeth in sheer frustration, boredom, irritation, annoyance, or bring on a distinct feeling of nausea that Elizabethtown managed. By the way, and then there's pages more. By the way, did you know that the League of Gentlemen mentioned your esteemed film critic in their programme?
When?
In what's on in the Royston Vasey area part of the booklet. The listings for the NFT Royston Vasey are as follows. Cinema 1, German War Triple Bill, Das Boot, Das Sock, Das Shoelace. And then it says, good but not as good as The Exorcist, Mark Kermode. Cinema 2, Donny Gothko, Dreary Pretentious for Glum Students Who Dye Their Hair Purple, Chris Kelly. No Exorcist, Mark Kermode. Cinema 3, Horror Double Bill, The Abominable Dr. Raj Pursued. Dr. Pursued Rise Again, with a quote from you at the end. And it just goes on pages and pages.
With so the Exorcist gags.
You're a running joke.
Fantastic. Can I just say, it was Colin Walsh who said the Bruce Campbell, and it was Ollie from Southampton who said Broken Flowers was boring.
Legend of Zorro at 5.
Ho and indeed hum. I started making all those noises last week and somebody thought I'd actually lost the power of speech. What I was trying to say was, you know, it's just more of the same, only not quite as good. And actually, I didn't think the original was that good. I mean, the remake wasn't that great anyway.
Brothers Grimm at 4.
The least Gilliam-esque of Terry Gilliam's movies.
Though he denies it.
Well, of course he's going to deny it, because he's got a film out there to sell, and God bless him for doing so. But it's, you know, gone in at number 4. I mean, I think... If you were, the only way of justifying this would be if you'd made all these compromises and the film was a rip-roaring hit. It's not. And, you know, I would much rather that Gilliam failed on his own terms. And, you know, believe me, it gives me no pleasure to say that I don't think it's a good Gilliam film. And the way I get around it is by saying that it's not a Gilliam film. It's a Gilliam-esque film, but it's not a Gilliam film. Sorry.
It's Gilliam-esque.
It is. It has moments of Gilliam-esqueness.
Saw 2 at 3.
Which I've just seen this morning. And because I was away when it was out, so I just saw it. And it's really nasty. I mean, it is really, really nasty. There were at least...
And that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, and there were at least three moments. I mean, it's flimsy and throwaway and all the rest of it, but there were at least three moments when I went, oh, ooh, And so it is something, particularly when a sequel... I mean, you know, they expanded it out. It was a room before. Now it's a house. But there are at least three moments, and one of them at the very beginning, as it was with the original, when you just go, oh, that's horrid.
Number two, Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
It's, you know, great. It's perfection. It's fantastic. It's lovely. It's marvellous. It's British. It makes no concessions to anyone else. And it's just terrific.
And I'm still enjoying that email that we got last week from Martin in Old Portsmouth talking about Gromit being up there with Buster Keaton.
He is.
And Charlie Chaplin as really a star is. Of the silent films.
Really is.
And the UK's number one, Nanny McPhee. That's a result for them.
I took my kids to see Nanny McPhee, and about halfway through it, so I've got a four-year-old and a six-year-old about to be seven, but halfway through it, my daughter turned and looked down there, and she went, "This is the best film I've ever seen." Now, afterwards, I had a strict word with her, and I said, "Now, really, is it better than Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban?" She went, "No." And I said, "Is it really better than Mary Poppins?" She went, "Well, no." I said, "Well, don't say things like the best movie ever. You don't really mean it." But she loved it. She
what kind of a dad are you?
I'm just dogmatic. I just want to be absolutely firm about this. But she absolutely loved it. She thought it was fantastic, as did my little boy. So I you know, and they really, really enjoyed the thing at the beginning, which was the cannibal thing about they've eaten the baby, which I think speaks volumes. You see, kids like horror.
So that's the top 10.
They haven't actually eaten the baby. It's a U certificate movie, you know.
So go see one of those. Or you can try something new.
Because we've got just a little bit of time before the news, I'll just start in the middle with In Her Shoes, which is this movie by Curtis Hanson starring Toni Collette and Cameron Diaz. And it's based on a best-selling novel, and it's a story of two sisters who, they couldn't be more different. Toni Collette is frumpy but feisty. She's a lawyer. Cameron Diaz, she's pesky and perky, and she keeps stealing her sister's shoes because her sister keeps a whole bunch of shoes because clothes don't look good in her, but shoes do. And then Cameron Diaz has some kind of ding-dong with the sister's boyfriend. There's all these tensions going on. Then, in the middle of it, Cameron Diaz gets on a train and goes to Miami. You think, that's it, fine, it's all finished. But no, we're going with her. And then we have to meet Shirley MacLaine, who's the grandmum. I like Shirley MacLaine. My tolerance for Shirley MacLaine is quite high. But about three quarters of an hour through, I'm thinking, A, how did the man who directed L.A. Confidential make a movie this sprawling? B, how did the woman who wrote the script for Erin Brockovich make a movie this syrupy and schmaltzy? Because, I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with Erin Brockovich, but it's got a very decent screenplay. And moreover, Toni Collette, right? Toni Collette is a great actress. We have to get beyond the point when Toni Collette does the thing about I'm the frumpy, ugly one. Toni Collette is neither frumpy nor ugly. I don't believe that she's the frumpy, ugly sister who has a hard time getting dates. I also don't believe that she's genetically related to Cameron Diaz, and I particularly don't believe that she's a lawyer who gives up her job to become a dog walker. And you're just sitting there going, now, everyone calls this a chick flick, but I kind of think that's sort of sexist or misogynist. I know that it's referred to as a chick flick, but that kind of suggests to me that actually what women want from films is a bunch of dozy, you know, saccharine schmaltzy, oh, she's my sister, oh, I love her, oh, I don't, oh, I'm having a difficult time, or kind of a plot, because a plot would put me off, because, oh, I'm a ditzy airheaded. When you think, no, I'm sorry. The word chick flick, it's not a chick flick. It's the insert the other word that I'm not going to mention here. That's what it is. It's a total mess. Both of them deserve better. Curtis Hanson should know better. It's apparently based on a best-selling novel, which I have to say I would, you know, have no intention of reading on the basis of having seen the film. And it's a total stinker. It says on the poster that it's better than Bridget Jones. It's not even better than Bridget Jones' Edge of Reason.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, can I say you might have a career as a female impersonator? Because that was quite good, and I've met some people like that.
Okay. At clubs.
This from Steve. We might as well continue. There's no newsreader around.
Sorry. I thought I was doing a brilliant job of
Are. We're all ready for the 3:30 news, but there's no... This is Steve. Saw In Her Shoes, slow start, but ends well.
Yeah.
Plus,
it's not a slow start. Saw 2 or In Her Shoes?
In Her Shoes.
Oh, no. Slow start, slow middle, I saw 2, yeah.
Ends well, plus no, Ms. Diaz is a big bonus
it
for the boys.
It doesn't end well.
At you've the, been dragged
there's
along.
There's a terrible bit when Cameron Diaz learns to read poetry, and then she gets up and in any movie in which the climax involves somebody reading poetry has to be flushed down the loo. Somebody should have got in there with a pair of gardening shears and taken a good 35 minutes out of that film. Actually, an hour and 20 wouldn't have been overdoing it.
Andy in Walsall. When I first started to tune to Five Live, I wasn't a fan of Mr. Kermode and his bubbling rants. But as time has gone on, I've grown to enjoy them and look forward to Friday afternoons until now. I'm afraid that the aforementioned film critic has let me down like a cheap pair of tights. I listened with a grimace earlier as he laid praise upon Bananarama. How could he do this? I'm afraid our relationship is back to square one. You have some making up to do, Kermie. A major rant is in order. And did I miss Bananarama's rockabilly period? Van Morrison skins the Bananas.
Well, of course, Jackie was in the Shillelagh Sisters, who were a kind of a rockabilly band.
OK, and that's enough. 85058, mayo@bbc.co.uk. It's 3:30. We're talking movies. Mark Coman here. Stacks of emails which are just wading through. Neil here says, after hearing on yesterday's programme that Mark thinks Local Hero is his second best film. This is because Dennis was in.
Yes.
And we had a good time, Dennis Lawson. Mm. And we were talking. And because certainly there was a time where the one thing we agreed on was that Local Hero is the second best movie ever made.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I'm just saying that's what I mentioned.
Yeah, no, I agree.
After hearing that, I might take him a bit more seriously now. And on reflection, maybe Pirates was bad after all.
Good. Well done.
See. Let's not go there.
No.
Ollie in Southampton. Dear Dr. Kermode, thank you for commenting on my comment about Broken Flowers. It's not boring. It's just very, very, very slow. People should know that the end is a disgrace and full refunds should be offered as you leave the theatre.
Well, no, I think is the only thing I'd say to that.
Now, Constant Garden, I imagine, is all coming right. up. So before you do that, Susie on this says, I hope Mark gives Constant Gardener a great review. I thought it was excellent, especially the performances of Fiennes and Wish, and feel that they should receive...
Is that how you pronounce it? Weiss, surely.
That'll do fine. That they should receive Oscar nominations, at least. There was an almost documentary feel to the film, which made it have a great impact. There you go. So, Constant Gardener, what do you think?
Okay, so...
You don't like it. See, we
Constant
know
instantly. No, hang on. Don't prejudge.
No, you don't like it.
Constant Gardener, based on a very polemical thriller by John Carey, originally set up as a project for Mike Newell, who ended up going off to direct the Harry Potter movie, which you have seen, but I haven't seen. Have you held forth on that yet?
No. Nope.
Okay, fine. Are you going to?
Well, when it comes out, maybe.
Okay, fine. So, replaced by Fernando. Now, either Mireles or Mireles, depending on which pronunciation is correct. And I have to say, I don't know. I always thought it was Mireles, but I heard on Radio 4 him being referred to as Mireles, and I'm sure that they know better than me. Anyway.
But feel free to correct me on Wish.
On Wish, exactly. So, the story is a quiet English diplomat, played by Ralph Fiennes, begins a relationship with a feisty firebrand idealist, played by Rachel, insert correct pronunciation here. And they become, in the wake of her death, which happens very, very early on in the movie, so I am not giving away the end, he basically uncovers a web of political and personal intrigue, which revolves around drug companies and their exploitation of the Third World, in which she is very active as a fighting force. Now, the thing about Constant Gardener is this. It's almost, you know, a dead cert for Oscars in the same way that The English Patient was. It is very intelligent. It has an interesting visual style, and I think Reyes really does know how to film his locations, which is something that he demonstrated very well in City of God, of which I was a great fan. And I think Rachel Weisz, however, what I thought was Weisz until you said whatever it was that you said.
I'm sure you know.
Is terrific, and I think that she deserves accolades. As far as the rest of it is concerned, I have some problems. One of them is I don't think Reyes is the world's greatest storyteller, and this is a very spiralling, convoluted narrative that I think needs a slightly firmer touch. Certainly, for my money, about halfway through, the film suffered from that thing which films should never suffer from, which is a slight case of tedium. And as that happened, you're in the middle of this kind of very realist, and it's interesting that email that you just read out then said, you know, almost documentary feel. You're in the middle of this very realist world, which starts to then tip over into melodrama and ends up in a melodramatic conclusion that I thought was actually rather silly. I think that he understands the feel of Nairobi slums brilliantly, but he's not so sure-footed in The English Corridors of Power. It's something he says himself, that he thought that it gave him an outsider's perspective. I think it gives it a slightly caricatured perspective. I'm not wowed by Ralph Fiennes' performance. I think it's a perfectly fine performance. But as with The English Patient, I think that what's starting to happen is that the apparent weight of the source material and the subject is making the film seem more important than it is. Now, let me be absolutely clear about this. It's not a bad film. It's just not a great film. What it is an interesting, intelligent, and ambitious film that works about half the time and then stops working. And at the point that it stops working, you are kind of carried along by a moral outrage rather than a dramatic involvement. In the end, I think it's a film to be admired rather than enjoyed. I think that there are great performances in it, but I think there are also duff performances in it. And I think that it is a film which has more on the surface than there actually is underneath. I don't doubt for one minute that these issues are very important and that it's brave of the film to tackle them. That doesn't mean it's a great film. One should always remember that, as with something like Gandhi, just because the subject matter is important doesn't necessarily mean the film is. It's a better film than Gandhi, but then so is almost everything.
Elizabeth Town?
Well, no, Elizabeth Town isn't better than Gandhi, although it's shorter than Gandhi, but they are kind of... Actually, Elizabeth Town is a lot worse, even though it's shorter.
So if it's a film to be admired rather than enjoyed, can I admire it without going to see it?
I suspect you can.
I do admire that film.
But the key text here is The English Patient, because I know an awful lot of people who actually, in a quiet moment, if you take them aside, will say, you know, actually, I thought The English Patient was pretty boring. But at the time, you weren't allowed to say The English Patient
was
boring.
In a piano kind of way.
Well, no, the piano is rubbish. I mean, the piano is... people will say that out loud because... Actually, maybe they say it out loud now in a way they didn't before the Oscars. So, yes, actually, that is a very good comparison.
I think the word dismal is more appropriate.
For the piano?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's just that awful moment when he starts sticking his finger in the hole in her stockings. You think, oh, for heaven's sake, I can just see the student essays on this piling up already. Would you please stop doing that and please stop playing that wretched piano theme? I mean, the only funny thing about it was the indignancy about the lack of nomination for the music. But I think it's in the same... If you loved The English Patient, if you thought The English Patient was worthy of all those Oscar noms and Oscar awards, then you are probably going to love The Constant Gardener. It's just that you and I are not going to be friends.
Ralph Fiennes will turn up shortly as he who must not be named.
Is he going to be...
He is. No, he's in it, as you will see.
Oh, because you've seen it already, yeah. Which I haven't. Did you like it?
Well, I think we should wait.
Okay.
Otherwise we'll get distracted.
Okay.
Tim Wood says, can we have Kermit on every day? I don't see any valid reason to refuse this. It's the best thing on radio. Just lock him up and make him talk about movies for hours and hours. Tim, I thought that's what he did.
But I have to go and see them first.
I'd rather listen to Kermo talk about films than even go to see them myself. Now, this is bad. Can you get him to talk more about Saw 2, please? I watched it on Wednesday and it was hideous, but good.
Yes, exactly.
I need those images exorcised from my mind, and only Kermode can do this for
me. There is one scene in Saw 2 in which somebody who is a drug addict has to fight through this sea of syringes in order to find a kid. And you just think, you know, the best thing about this sequence is you have to be really sick to think this up. And I was actually quite impressed because it's fairly rarely that I think, whoa, you know. So it's nicely nasty. It's not Citizen Kane, but it's nicely nasty.
Simon in Froom, I totally agree with Mark with his Elizabeth Town review. Good. Slow and dull. My girlfriend and I left after an hour.
There you see.
On the subject of Asterix, which we were talking about earlier, Dave says it was Asterix in Switzerland.
There you go.
This is because apparently there's an orgy in
there
Asterix.
Is.
I was saying it wasn't racy. And Asterix was looking for the Edelweiss flower for a potion for Getafix.
That's right, exactly right. And they're all, if I'm not mistaken, they're all growing fantastically hairy. And so there's a whole thing about there being hairs in the cheese, which is the thing that has stuck with me, the image that has stuck with me. I can't eat fondue anymore.
Dan on this says, can I just predict that... What, you mean there was a time when you did? I didn't think anyone ate fondue.
In the 70s, everyone did, didn't
no
you?
No one eats fondue.
Well, you know, I ate fondue in the 70s.
Dan says, can I just predict that this holiday season, Mark will rate a substandard Christmas movie as Ho 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 Hum, and next year, Pirates of the Caribbean 2 as Yo Ho Hum. And a bottle of rum. So can you're just getting it in.
Right, can you keep them there? Because actually, I will use them. Because those are great now. Thanks.
Now, I imagine it'll be Kiss Kiss Bang Bang next, won't it? Okay. Lots of correspondence on that already. So let's take some travel first of all. Steve, on this, Constant Gardener sounds very similar to a 1980s David Suchet film called Song for Europe about a corrupt drug company.
Haven't seen it.
Missed that. Richard, it sounds... No, maybe I won't go and look it out. Richard says, Richard in London, saw a preview screening of Constant Gardener a week ago, was really looking forward to it. It was awful. It felt like it lasted 3+ hours. Was amazed to find I'd only endured it just over 2. Intelligent. Are you having a laugh, Mark? It's clunky, crude, useless piece of storytelling.
Yeah, I think it's bad storytelling, yeah. I do think it's intelligent in that I think it's... I think it aspires high, but I don't like it.
This from Andrew. How sad am I? I look forward to my weekends as most people do, but for what? Is it for the sport? Is it for the pub? No, it's for the rants. from Dr. Kermode, and once again, he hasn't disappointed. All downloadable again via the website on a podcast, the second most popular podcast in the world, I'm told.
What's the first most?
I'm not interested.
Okay.
But we will be soon. Yeah. And this is Jan's in Solihull. Bananarama were to music what Spice Girls were to film.
Do not say Bananarama and Spice Girls in the same breath.
How can Kermode sit there and talk up a group of singers who, to my knowledge, did not write or produce any music or, for that matter, play any instruments? Listening to film reviews will never be the same.
Well, what I can say is that if you go back and listen to the second Bananarama album, which has songs about Northern Ireland, and they are also, I think, the only...
Oh, well, that proves it. Well, they
no,
must
no,
be
no,
good
no,
then.
Sorry, but people said... And they did write those, incidentally. You know.
Anyway, they've written the songs on their new album, none of which is relevant. People tune in not for your thoughts on Bananarama, but maybe occasionally for
a film. One of the
review.
Very few bands we've had a top 10 single about sexual harassment, so I'm sorry. I think they're
much
more...
conclusively proves it again.
No, what I'm saying is when people say, oh, they don't, you know, they're not...
Well, just because they sing about Northern Ireland and sexual harassment.
No, but it's just that people always think that Bananarama is just, ooh, I love you, everything's marvellous. And in fact, it's completely the opposite. It's no surprise the person who gave them their first break was Paul Cook, who was the drummer of the Sex Pistols.
Finished.
And Elvis Costello played IEA M1R when he was depping for John Peel once.
Finished. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, please.
OK, so Shane Black, who is the writer of things like Lethal Weapon and Last Boy Scout, hasn't been heard of for a little while, making his directorial debut. And from the outside, I have to say the signs aren't good, largely because it's a self-reflexive, satirical, noir thriller starring, get this, Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer.
Just
now,
describe it again. It's a
self-reflexive, noir. You know what noir is?
Yes.
Film noir,
dark.
Yes. So satirical noir, as in it's aware of Chandler and Hammett and Kay and all that sort of stuff. But it's satirical because it's postmodern and self-reflexive, so people make gags. So, for example, at the beginning of the movie, the movie is narrated to us by Robert Downey Jr., who says, hello, I will be your narrator for this movie. Oh, hang on, I've forgotten a bit. I better go back.
Like a waiter in TGI Friday.
Exactly like that. And he keeps sort of, because he's not a very good narrator. Now, the problem is, well, actually, the good thing is, I have always had an issue with Robert Downey Jr., self-indulgent, waffling nincompoop, and Val Kilmer, preening, self-indulgent, waffling egomaniac. Okay? And as you know, I have not been a fan of their work in the past. So I went into Kiss Kiss Bang Bang thinking, oh, great, so we're going to get, you know, post-Pulp Fiction, neo-noir, satirical, blah-de-blah-de-blah all over again with two of the most irritating actors in the world, all backslapping and the rest of it. The story is that Robert Downey Jr. is Harry Lockhart, who's a petty thief, who, on the run from the cops, runs into an audition. They think he's a method actor. They send him to Hollywood to audition for a role, where he meets up with Val Kilmer, who plays a private investigator called Perry Van Schryke, known as Gay Perry, as in Gay Perry, and gag being, of course, he is gay.
No,
I know. It's astonishing, but the clue's in the name. And they are then involved in this incredibly convoluted, frankly incomprehensible murder mystery, during which you're not that interested in the plot because it's very, very hard to follow. But what you are interested in is the chemistry between these two previously infuriating actors. And basically, that's what the whole of the movie's like. It's like those two doing that. And the most amazing thing about it is it's actually quite funny. There's a funny thing with Shane Black, which is that when he was at his, you know, the height of his vulgar powers, he would write these really, really caustic, nasty, well, they were called zingers, I think was the phrase. It was the line, for example, that Bruce Willis would say before dispensing somebody, but would do it in a kind of self-referential way. Oh, you know, now it's the 90s, you've got to have the line before you do the thing. And after a while, that becomes fantastically irritating. But he's been away for a while, and he's obviously refreshed himself, and he's come back as the funny, sparky, completely heartless, completely inconsequential, completely flimsy, but actually rather enjoyable writer stroke director that he used to be. Astonishingly, the film only cost $15 million to make, and it looks like it cost an awful lot more. But the real key to its charm is that Val Kilmer has somehow finally got himself a sense of humour. Now, I mean, Val Kilmer has done comedy in the past, and he's been notable for not being very funny. And, of course, as you know from the many stories reported in the press, there are several people who have found working with Mr. Kilmer difficult. I think difficult is the official word for working with Val. And, of course, I think Richard Stanley, one of the great British directors, who really has had a lot of trouble since Val Kilmer worked with him on The Island of Dr. Moreau and Richard was shown the door as a result of Val being difficult. Well, somehow, Val Kilmer, after having come through that weird performance in Wonderland, has discovered that he is funny if he ridicules himself. And his performance as Gay Perry is really, really funny. Robert Downey Jr., who has far too often been allowed off the leash, been allowed to just ramble and shamble and mumble in a way that he finds incredibly entertaining, has found his match in Shane Black's script. And somehow, that weird, irritating, rambling intonation of his, and listen, look who's talking incidentally about weird, irritating, rambling intonation, is a perfectly set for Shane Black's script. The film has no substance. It is in one ear and out the other. And at the end of it, I don't think there's anything that would make you go back in the way that Pulp Fiction did. I mean, the funny thing about Pulp Fiction is when you finish Pulp Fiction, you think, I've got to go and watch it again to see if it all ties up. And when you watch it, you realise it ties up absolutely brilliantly. There's that fantastic scene in which you see the Ving Rhames character walking, you know, across with the cup of coffee, and you have to figure out how he got to being there. And anyway, it all ties up really beautifully. There's none of that in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. What there is in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is all surface. But what a surface it is. And for giving those two actors the chance to actually demonstrate that they are far more than just irritating nitwits, I think hats off to him. It makes Sin City look deep, but as shallowness goes, it's pretty shiny.
Frank, in Beckenham, Mark may be interested to hear that after the screening of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang at the London Film Festival, Shane Black did a Q&A session, question-answer session, in which he claimed that The Exorcist was his favourite ever film.
Well, there we go.
And that his next project would be a horror movie. I thought the film was well... This is Kiss Kiss. Mm. Was well played by Downey and Kilmer, and the gags went down really well with the audience, but perhaps it was all just a bit too knowing and self-consciously hip.
Yeah, I think that is the one criticism of it, that you can get fed up with it knowing itself as well as it does, but I thought it was light and frothy enough for that not to be an issue.
What else is new?
Hustle and Flow. A Sundance Award winner, a Sundance Audience Award winner, with a great performance by Terrence Howard. Terrence Howard is a pimp. And we are meant to think that this is a really difficult, hard life. And Terrence Howard attempts to escape from being a pimp by making his own music, the Crunk brand of music.
Crunk?
Crunk. Apparently it's a term that everyone knows, only me then. So there's this kind of weird church thing going on in the background. You think, oh, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a psychological voyage. You know, at the beginning of it, he's a pimp, and then he falls in with these churchy guys, and then something's going to happen. No, it doesn't. What happens is he borrows their drum machine, he uses the piano, and he starts making sort of hip-hop records. And the lyric of the key hip-hop record is that it's hard out there for a pimp when you're trying to make some money for the rent. And it's really, really hard for a pimp when you've got a whole lot of, I'm not going to say the word, jumping ship because they're all, you know, all those other words. Now, I'm sorry. Did I miss a meeting? I understand that there is something about, you know, oh, well, the authentic language and blah, 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 blah. But if you have a movie about a pimp, and let's face it, being a pimp is not an admirable profession. It's up there with selling drugs and, you know, being a generally despicable person. And if in that movie... Sorry, David's laughing because David thinks I don't understand this movie because I'm not culturally adept.
Who's David?
Who just walked in and gave you those things. OK, he works for the programme. You know who David is.
Yes, just explaining it on behalf of everyone else.
I know, fine.
First idea okay. What you're talking about.
I think that there is an interesting film in there, but unfortunately it is lost in the fact that Craig Brewer doth not understand that, I'm sorry, it is no longer completely acceptable to imagine that casting all your women as, you know, hoes is a completely ordinary and normal thing to do. And frankly, I don't feel any sympathy for somebody who's a pimp. I'm sorry, there we go. There's a great performance by Terrence Howard, and the enthusiasm of his performance almost manages to paper over the ideological cracks. But then we end up with the theme song, which he has recorded, which tells us, and I feel like, did the 1960s and 70s not happen? Did we suddenly decide that actually, oh, it's all completely fine to have these really outrageously sexist ideas and really believe that actually this is completely normal and okay? So, sorry. And an awful lot of people are being very politically correct and not saying this because, hey, you know, well, it's a race issue. It's not a race issue. It's just a simple human decency issue. If you have a character, if you have a film in which a whole load of the characters are you know, prostitutes, who are being pimped by this guy, you have to take into account that their life may not be so great.
And on that subject, we...
Sorry.
No, it's fine. This is Ian, who says, Mark, The English Patient isn't a bit dull. It's monumentally
dull.
Enormously dull. It hurt my bottom when I saw it in the cinema, and I have never had the slightest wish to see it again. Even Kristin Scott Thomas couldn't stop it. being awful. Mark in Upton Park. Saw 2 gets a better review than Constant Gardener, and they say the BBC is dumbing down.
It's not to do with dumbing down. It's to do with, you know, you judge movies on the basis of what they're aiming to be. The fact is with Saw 2 is it's a nasty little horror movie that does what it sets out to do. Nobody is going to say, you know, Saw 2, I think it should definitely get best film, best director, best actor. But it's not in that market. It is perfectly possible to judge films by the standards to which those films aspire. You cannot, you know, judge all movies. You can't say, well, Animal House. You know what's wrong with Animal House? It's not Apocalypse Now.
Jay in South Wales, I'm a huge fan of Professor Kermode. Think it fantastic. He's so fond of Bananarama. I'm not one of the girls' fans myself, but the fact that Mark has said all that just adds to his innate strangeness and has possibly inspired me to buy a Bananarama album. Could Mark possibly suggest where I should start?
Deep Sea Skiving is good, but but Bananarama is actually the one. I know everyone loves WoW, but Bananarama is the one.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time now, so that's quite enough. Jay, thanks. Try the new album. It's not bad either.
Isn't
Mark,
it?
Thank you.
Okay.
And we're back Monday at 1 o'clock. Have a good weekend. Drive comes next.